You're listening to Star Wars Beyond the Films, the official expanded universe podcast of StarWarsReport.com.
There is a great disturbance in the Force.
You're listening to Star Wars Beyond the Films, Episode 12, airing on Middle Earth Network Radio. I'm one of your hosts, the defender of the EU, Mark Hurtleman, and with me, as always, the EU guru himself, Nathan P. Butler.
Hello, everyone. Hello. And we have a guest with us this time around. You know him as the SWAN, or Star Wars Action News, if you don't know what SWAN means, Holocron Enhancer. You also know him from Republic Forces Radio Network, where he joins me and many others in discussing the Clone Wars each week. Ladies and gentlemen, joining us this time is Mr. Barrett Lawton. Hey, Barrett, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing very well, and thank you very much for inviting me to talk with you about racism, or not racism, but racial equality in Star Wars, I guess the topic is.
Yes, it is, though I'm not sure which of those actually fit. I guess we'll find that out by the end of the discussion, hopefully.
Yeah, we loosely called it race factor. Is the EU too, for lack of a better term, whitewashed? We're going to be exploring ethnicity in a universe where humans, as we know it, don't quite exist. I mean, it's a difficult topic when you address it in-universe. I mean, because what is out-universe in a universe that's in-universe? It gets confusing to even talk about. Now, speaking of talking about this, Nathan, correct me if I'm wrong here. You've covered this topic with Brian Gates back on Chrono Radio days, something like 2003, right?
That's right. It was Chrono Radio number 9. We were just starting out the second year of the 5-year run of Chrono Radio, and Brian Gates came on, and we were discussing this issue. And what really kind of brought this back up again is that now, all of a sudden, George Lucas has a whole new playground to play in with the Clone Wars. It's not just movies and EU. There's movies, EU, and now there's that Clone Wars there, which doesn't even require physical actors other than voices, which sort of opens up the door to, well, in the time since 2003 with Revenge of the Sith, more EU, and now the Clone Wars, you know, maybe the racial imbalances, the ethnic imbalances we saw in Star Wars at the time when discussing it the first time, maybe those are gone, maybe they're exacerbated, maybe it's just sort of stuck in neutral. We don't know yet. So we want to get into that topic here this time around, kind of as a rapid fire type of thing. But we do have to say, starting out, that we need to make sure that everybody gets at least a sense of who we are as we're going into this discussion, because we have a variety of different locations around the country, racial backgrounds ourselves, and also different backgrounds that we are surrounded by in our daily life. So let's go around the circle and get a sense of who everyone is in terms of ethnicity and the background of the area. For instance, for example, I am a 32-year-old white guy originally from Evansville, Indiana, which basically meant that it was a very white area. My high school graduating class had probably 10 or less minority students in it of any kind, and I now have moved, as of 2002, to Georgia, where I teach in a high school and am in an area that is predominantly an African-American area. So I would say our school is probably 85 to 90% black, and then it's probably split pretty much down the middle then with what's left as white and Latino students. So in my case, it was a very different racial thing as I was growing up versus being down here from the standpoint of diversity. And now, you know, it's kind of something I almost don't even notice, you know, on a daily basis unless something specifically brings up an issue of some type of inequality somewhere. Barrett, why don't you take the next part of our introductions here?
Well, I'm African American, and I'm 35 years old, and I grew up in Los Angeles County around a lot of African Americans, and it's kind of just the opposite. We had probably around 10 white students in my high school, and Star Wars was not very popular with the African American community in my area because it was always kind of considered a geek thing. You know, you would ask some of my friends who I grew up with, and they wouldn't know the difference between Star Wars or Star Trek. To them, it was kind of like a Caucasian geek thing. And if you were a geek and African-American, you were kind of more like the Urkel geek, you know, and even Urkel didn't like Star Wars, you know, or he was just kind of an awkward, socially awkward person. And that's the kind of black African-American geek you were. Star Wars wasn't in the equation. So it was very difficult actually finding friends to play with Star Wars figures and talk to them about the movies and stuff like that, because it was just, they just weren't there. You know, just the geeks were book thumpers, and that just wasn't an option. So it was very challenging to stay a fan, you know, because once you kind of let that out of the box that, you know, you owned a lightsaber, you know who Obi-Wan Kenobi was, it presented a challenge for you more than walking away from. It presented a challenge kind of more than staying out of a gang. You know, it was kind of like you were shunned even more than that, because gangs were kind of acceptable, but being a geek wasn't. So that's kind of where my background was coming from.
As you can be a Crip, you can be a Blood, but don't you dare be a Jedi or a Sith.
Don't say blaster or phaser, because you'll get blasted and phased.
Exactly.
Yeah, that was me. I was a closet geek for quite a while. I didn't want to take the social suicide route by coming out. And then 97, the year I was a senior, you know, the prequels or the original trilogy was specialized, and I got to shine. I was like, all my friends hadn't seen Star Wars. Oh, let's go watch it. Yeah, we'll all watch it together for the first time. Yeah, well, it's not my first time, but we'll watch it with you guys. You know, I'm a mutt. I'm 32 myself. My dad is about half Swiss. His dad was the first of his family of like 12 born in the United States. So that shines through clear as day. I'm as white as they come, albino boy belly. But I'm a total mutt. My dad's mom is Cherokee. In fact, I got to get my registration going and get that taken care of. I'm actually enough that I can be part of the tribe. So that's cool. My mom's side of the family is so mudded up. It's not even funny. We've got Irish. We've got Gaelic, English, German, Russian, you name it, they've been there. You know, their ancestors were pirates and moonshiners and things like that. So, you know, that I just come from a wide range. My one of my best friends when I was growing up was Hispanic, and you know, he was Joey, and he always went by Jose, and I was the Jose B to his Jose everywhere we went. But I didn't think anything of it at the time. You know, I moved down to where I live now from, you know, Hicksville. I lived up in the mountains with no power until I was about 9. So when I moved down here, I thought the city I'm living in now was like huge, like Portland size, and it's nothing, you know. But at the time, I thought it was just crazy huge. And that's when I learned that my grandpa, of all people, was actually very racist. I didn't know it at the time because I, you know, grew up and grandpa was always saying off-the-wall things. I just assumed that's things grandpas do. It wasn't until I moved off the mountain. It was like, holy crap, grandpa is a total racist meephole, you know, just like one of those things. So, you know, it's interesting for me because I come at it from, I go to places and I'm worried people are going to think I'm racist because of something I may have said from hearing my grandpa say in the past and things, you know, and things like, oh, he called him anything but a white man. And I didn't think anything of this as when I was younger, but once I moved and I had friends that were of other ethnicities, I was like, oh man, I got to watch what I say because I'm not thinking anything of it. It don't mean anything when it comes out of my mouth, but I know how people take things. And so, you know, I have that kind of a outlook on it. It's like, I don't ever want to offend people with the things I say, but I just say random things at times.
All right, so having gone around the circle in that regard, let's take the next step beyond our own personal situations and take that into the Star Wars connection here. Is there any way in which, I would say, any of our own or your own, you know, because I'm including myself, and I said, do our own ethnic backgrounds affect how we view the Star Wars saga? I would almost say that when I was a kid living in the town that I lived, where the minority population was so small, at least in my, I guess, my part of the city, it was different whenever I was student teaching at a city across town, because you had, it's almost like a clustering of different ethnic groups as opposed to diversity everywhere. And in my case, I would say that I didn't see the racial imbalance in, say, the classic trilogy, with Lando being the only prominent African-American character, the only black character, Sakoran character, we now know. I didn't see that imbalance and consider it an imbalance, I don't think, when I was a kid, because, I really wasn't brought up thinking of race as an issue anyway, but also because, you know, that reflected to a degree the demographics of the schools that I was in from a proportional standpoint. It never would have hit me as a kid to think of a race issue with Star Wars at all. What about you two? Do your own backgrounds, you think, ethnically have any bearing on how you look at Star Wars?
I'm in your camp. It never even clued on me, you know, until I got much older and then saw other people talking about it. And I was like, you know, you're right. There is kind of a dominance here. What about you, Barrett?
Oh, I absolutely, as a kid growing up, you know, just being African American in this country, you're more sensitive to racial things. And I absolutely felt it because I remember as a kid when Lando, you know, you bring up Lando, Nathan. I remember as a kid, my black friends and parents would say, what is Billy Dee Williams doing in the Star Wars movie? You know, it was kind of like he shouldn't be there, you know, because that's not for us. And I remember very clearly my family members and friends of my family actually saying that after we saw that movie. And I've told this story before on Republic Forces Radio Network. Actually, I think I told it on SWAN when we had the 30th anniversary show for Empire, that we actually saw it in a drive-in, my brother and I. And, you know, I always thought when it was the absence of black characters or ethnic characters, you know, I always kind of thought like Chewbacca was black or Darth Vader always seemed black to me. Nice. I don't know if it was because of the voice, but we, you know, those were the kind of characters that I would be drawn to. You know, those were the black characters until Billy Dee came in and he really didn't act black. You know, act black, because I remember seeing Billy Dee and Mahogany and other films like that where he was kind of playing a shucking and jiving character. And in he was like, you know, he was the least black character in Star Wars that I ever saw. But yeah,
Don Juan Delanooch.
Right. Absolutely. I felt the lack of ethnicity in these movies. I mean, that was very prevalent when I was a kid.
Now, speaking of Billy Dee Williams as Lando Calrissian, I must say, you know, the only time I ever looked at Billy Dee Williams in a part and said, you know, wow, what's he doing in that movie was Batman, because Harvey Dent wasn't a black character originally. That's why they had to go recast him with Tommy Lee Jones apparently later. But that's a whole other issue for Batman, and we're getting way too close to the Schumacher films. speaking of Lando, though, the two prominent examples, of course, of non-white human characters in the Star Wars films would be Lando Calrissian in the classic trilogy and Mace Windu in the prequels. You could also add in there, often forgotten, you've got Gregor Typho and Captain Panaka from the prequels as well, and then the Jango Fett and clones from him. But from the standpoint of individual characters who get a lot of screen time, it tends to focus down on Lando and Mace. Does it seem that they were brought into Star Wars just to answer the diversity issue, essentially as, to use the politically incorrect phrase for it, I guess, tokens? Or were these actors, you think, cast, were they cast for the roles and they just happened to be black actors? Or was this a, uh-oh, we don't have enough diversity in our human cast, we need to bring in some guys. Hey, let's check with Samuel L. Jackson. Hey, let's check in with Billy Dee Williams and see if they want a part. What do you think it was? I haven't read any of the behind-the-scenes books in any great depth for the classic trilogy, so maybe this has been addressed before. I have no idea. Do you guys have any insight onto this or any theories?
You know, I absolutely think that's what it was. I think that, you know, I just remember hearing things like on the forums and stuff like that. I haven't, like you, Nathan, I haven't read too much of the behind the scenes, but I kind of got the feeling that George Lucas was getting a little heat for everything being white in the future. There's no black people in the future. You know, that was the thing when I was a kid. There's no black people in the future. You know, where are we all? Are we all dead? You know, even Star Trek had black people, you know.
Yeah. And, what the heck, George?
Yeah, so I think it absolutely brought Billy Dee Williams in to fill that spot, you know. And then with the prequel trilogy, Mace Windu, I think you needed a big, strong black Jedi that was on the council because you had all of these white Jedis, you know, and not including the aliens. I don't know if we're going to get into the aliens because there's definitely some racial things going on with these aliens that maybe he was trying to make up. You know, I always kid Marjorie, who is the co-host of Star Wars Action News, about Jar Jar being digital blackface. But I'm sure we'll get into that. But I absolutely think that that was a conscious decision made by George Lucas in order to appease some of his fans, because more and more African-Americans, Spanish, Latino, I think we're getting into the Star Wars movies and reading the books because we were becoming more educated. And I think he was thinking, you know, I'm not going to miss out on that market. So we have to put somebody in there that people can relate to.
Yeah. You know, with Red Tails out there, you know, he does think about, you know, people relating. I could see Lando totally being that case. Samuel L. Jackson, though, I mean, he's Samuel L. Jackson. I mean, you just add him and any movie is going to be a little more awesome. and I love the fact that Samuel L. Jackson, of all people, you know, came down and was like, I want a purple lightsaber. You know, George, give me what I want. I'll do the Pulp Fiction. You know, I'll rock it. It's just one of those things where, I don't know, with the prequel trilogy, I'm kind of surprised, though, that we didn't get more. I mean, I don't know, maybe with the fact that we've got Boba Fett and Jango Fett now, you know, our perceptions have changed in the future. Now we find out that they were there the whole time. They were actually darker skinned. So I don't know. For me, it doesn't change too much. But again, I think that gets back to, you know, I never really thought about it as much. It wasn't ever really an issue, you know, for me growing up to think about it. I, you know, was so in my own little island oasis of, you know, no, I don't know, man. And we were out there. It was complete Hicksville. That people were doing whatever they wanted, and you never even thought anything. It was more like, what's so-and-so doing down the hill? Oh, he just got hit by a truck, you know, things like that. <You know>? So, you know, it wasn't until I started reading the books that I started to notice it more. Because in the books, it was like, and comic books especially, it's like, why is everybody the same color? Why, you know, Kara Holt is supposed to look like Salma Hayek. I probably butchered her name, but... You know, and I kept going, well, she's supposed to be like that. She's supposed to be a little more chocolatey, and they're making her look a little more vanilla. I mean, what's going on? To me, it's like one of those things, like in comics especially, that seems to be one of the forums where you're able to at least get the skin tone out there for those that are worried about that. But like Barrett was saying about, you know, the aliens, that seems to be the way that George is able to really bring cultural diversity in. I mean, in the Clone Wars, we've got some aliens that are like the Scottish, you know, they're all talking Scottish. And then you've got the where one group all does a lot of Japan type things and Japanese culture showing up. And I think that Lucas is using the aliens to kind of bring that forward, but you can't quite do the same as you can in a comic with the skin tone. I mean, you can really play with the skin tone more, but I begin to wonder what people really want. Do you want to have the skin tone representation, or would you rather have your cultural representation? As a mutt myself, my culture is just so lost to me. I mean, I have nothing really to celebrate beyond family traditions, because we've got so many diverse backgrounds that we're just now discovering, because of one whole side of my family. My mom's side of the family was cut off from a rich side of family because he was a moonshiner. And it's like, we just discovered this whole branch of our family. It's like, for me, that stuff only recently became an issue to even think about. So, you know, I'm kind of new to that whole area, but I've seen a lot of people complaining and saying, hey, why aren't we getting this more and stuff like that? And when you look at it, you do have to kind of wonder, why aren't we?
Yeah. You know, you bring up that that Mace got the purple lightsaber. It's like when he brought the purple, you know, we Negroes like purple. OK, you know, we were excited when he picked the purple lightsaber. We were just glad he didn't get a purple tunic. But, you know, you bring up the fact that it was very interesting with something you said. Is it more important to have culturally represented or skin tone represented? And I think it's probably more important to have the culture represented, because, you know, in some of the Clone Wars, in one of the Clone Wars episodes where R2 and C-3PO are doing their Wizard of Oz thing, you know, you kind of had like the white trash people there. You know, and they talk like they were hillbilly hand fishing. You know, they didn't look like it, but they talk like that.
Yeah.
You know, and I think it might be it's a fine line to play for George Lucas, but I think it's a little bit smarter to where if you project a culture that way in an alien race, you can still bring out the same feelings of loving, you know, that race. You know, if you feel like, you know, they have something in common with you, than just putting a bunch of black people out there, a bunch of, you know, Spanish people out there. So I think it's a little bit smarter when he does that.
I cannot believe you just referenced Nomad Droids, given our coverage of that over on RFRN. Okay, well, I mean, let's go with this same kind of line of thinking here. A couple things that had popped to mind to discuss. We'll kind of merge them together. I mean, after the first two prequels had been released, not as much with Episode 3, but certainly with The Phantom Menace and Attack of the Clone, there were accusations out there about essentially racial stereotyping as either characters or races, that the Nemoidians are essentially stereotypes of some form of East Asian culture, that Jar Jar is essentially a stereotype, or perhaps all the Gungans, of a West Indies culture, or perhaps a Rastafarian culture, with the idea of the floppy ears being essentially a surrogate for dreadlocks, that Watto was somehow expected to be this Jewish merchant type of figure, and that the clones, which I thought was kind of just idiotic at the time, that the clones, who are played by Tamira Morrison, Bodie Taylor, and Daniel Logan, who are Maori, not Hispanic, are somehow symbolic of this massive, dark-skinned, unpaid or low-paid workforce that's invading the rest of the galaxy. Do you think that any of those accusations, to put it bluntly, any of those accusations against Lucas or against the creative team in terms of using the racial stereotypes in a negative way, do any of them hold water? Or is this essentially his way of saying, we don't have to have diverse human characters from a racial standpoint, or even from a cultural standpoint, at least within the films, we can simply turn around and say, okay, you know, since we've got mostly white culture represented by most of the humans, we'll just take all these other cultures around the world, whichever one it may be, and instead of making that a human culture or have some kind of tie into human culture, we'll make that an alien culture. For example, you've got, you know, the Twi'leks now, thanks to the Clone Wars, thanks to the accent given to Aayla Secura, they are given a much more French perspective because they wanted to tie it into the idea of the French Revolution when they did the Ryloth trilogy. So are the accusations about the racial stereotyping accurate? Do they hold water? And is this possibly Lucas's way, as I think we've hinted to here, of essentially avoiding having to have a multiracial human culture by having these alien cultures?
That was a lot of questions.
Yeah, that was a lot of questions, Nathan. But in the short answer, absolutely. Absolutely. In the long answer, you just have to look at what racial diversity that you have. You know, you have Organa, you know, played by Jimmy Smits, who is Latino, right? He's not a white guy, but he talks white. You got Mace Windu, who's obviously African-American, you know, but he talks white. So it seems like all of the racial people that they put in there, you know, Typho, none of them talk slang. None of them put in a yo-yo-yo-yo-yo or anything like that to kind of connect them to some culture. So he brought it into the aliens. He made the aliens that way. And it's kind of a sneaky way of getting around being racist, you know, where he wasn't called being racist. And you can kind of write it off and say, but they're aliens, you know, they're aliens. But if you did that, if you put a bunch of Mexicans on with the Death Watch, remember we had talked about, you know, I said, I guess, you know, on Death Watch, they must clean their own houses because everybody was white.
Oh, yeah, because, you know, they're all Nordic. They're all based on Nordic culture, right, for the Death Watch. Yeah,
exactly. So you couldn't put a bunch of, like, you know, essays over there and have them cleaning up the dead bodies that are being pushed over the cliff. So you put in some, you know, some aliens who kind of have that. So I, in the short answer, absolutely. I think that was his plan, was to avoid that by doing the aliens the way he's doing them.
Yeah, you know, if philosophers can say things so far in the past and we can still find ways to interpret it in different events throughout history, I think anybody's going to be able to see what they want to in Star Wars. Barrett, he brought up a good point in the aspect. Something I always thought of when this topic first really was something I started to think about. It was, what is an Asian in a galaxy that does not know Asians? I mean, how are you going to describe? I mean, I'm thinking mainly in the books. The TV shows, it's a little easier to do. You can, you know, draw them in there and it's like, oh, okay, that guy's an Asian. But now in a book, it's a lot harder to do all the way around. I mean, even with African and black, you can get, well, he was black skinned or dark skinned or dark tone, and, you know, things like that. But again, it gets back to that. How do you describe a person that, as far as you know, doesn't really exist in the galaxy? I mean, that's not to say that they don't. It's just, how do you describe it? I mean, that's where it's a difficult place to tread when you've got so many people looking at and dissecting every aspect of your saga. You know, like Nathan was bringing up with the clones and, you know, the lower class coming in and sweep. I mean, I could totally see where people could see that. It's not something that I would necessarily think of when I'm watching the saga so much, but I could see it when it's presented, and then you go back and look, and, oh, okay, yeah, I could see that. I could totally see that. And I find that that's some of the more interesting things about everything I do geek. It's like, I can enjoy something, and then I'll go and talk to somebody else that likes it and is passionate about it. And they, oh, did you catch this? And no, I didn't. I'll go back and check it. Oh, holy cow, that changes everything. And that's one of the things about it. Like, even though it can be a negative at times, in a lot of cases, it can also be fun because it opens up your mind to new things. And that, to me, is always good.
Are you talking about the tattoo on Jar Jar's ear that said Bojangles? Is that the thing you're talking about? Said, oh, I missed that.
Oh, no problem. That's in the extra special edition that we'll get as right after they milk us for the 3D Blu-ray whenever it finally comes out. Mark mentioned about how this is presented in the EU, and we'll get to sort of whether or not the EU has been more diverse than, say, the films or the Clone Wars. But he makes a good point about how do you describe this? I mean, you can't use the term, you know, East Asian, Southeast Asian. You can't use terminology like that within Star Wars because those are locations that literally don't exist in a galaxy far, far away. But I take the example here. I grabbed Shadow Games while you guys were speaking there. I was listening, but I grabbed Shadow Games. And when talking about Kendera Farleon, who is Javel Charn's, essentially her manager slash bodyguard type figure, they refer to her only by saying, a slender arm the color of burnished bronze thrust over her shoulder, its index finger pointing at the curt warning still hanging in the air from a holographic message. They always have to find some way to say it like that, and if it's one of those blink and you'll miss it kind of things, you know, as far as the EU goes. So I have to wonder maybe if perhaps we're missing some of the diversity that's there because those physical descriptions often disappear as we're trying to create our own image of them in our minds. But on this idea of the aliens, we've said how, you know, some of the alien cultures are essentially taking other real-world cultures and sort of running with them, you know. And that's sort of a thing Star Wars does a lot of times is that they take one character trait and ascribe it to an entire species, very much like there's one climate for every planet, it seems like. In this case, but, you know,
like
you've
all
got...
All Twi'leks are dancers.
I say all Twi'leks are dancers, or could be if they're female, I guess. All Rodians are bounty hunters. All Hutts are gangsters, et cetera, et cetera. You know, you've got this...
Those musical bits.
Yeah, exactly. Those musical bits and such, except for Darth Tenebris, although I bet he whistled while he worked on Sith stuff. But it begs the question, though, when it comes down to ethnic groups, not necessarily culture, but ethnic groups within these alien cultures, it almost seems like the humans have turned out to be the least diverse within Star Wars a lot of the time. They're culturally diverse. You know, Coruscant, Corellia, Mandalore, all these different cultures that they come from, and they bring that in. But from an ethnic standpoint, except for against Socorro and a few other examples, you don't tend to see planets that will tend to be leaning towards any human ethnicity other than simply white Caucasian. But you look at the Twi'leks. There's all kinds of different Twi'lek skin tones now. You look at the Aqualish. There's three different groups of Aqualish, all subspecies of the same broader species. But the humans don't seem to have nearly as much variance as in the alien cultures. You know, part of me wants to say that, well, that's because, you know, they're creating new alien cultures, and sometimes there's going to be confusion as to physical features, and you'll describe one way, one another way in another book, and that has to become a subspecies to make it fit from a continuity standpoint. And yeah, perhaps because they're creating a whole new species here, they can take a lot more liberties with it than they would for human beings. But doesn't it seem as though, in a lot of ways, the alien cultures, not necessarily in terms of the home worlds they're from in those cultures, but from an ethnic standpoint of subgroups within the species, we tend to see alien cultures a lot more diverse in Star Wars than the humans?
Absolutely. The way you put that, yeah, that's absolutely. Even with the droids, I was just thinking about, you know, when we watched the 3D and I was watching the little droids that were going through the droid army and picking up, you know, the dead pieces of the, you know, the main droids. One of those things, too. I mean, even there, we see it. It is something that, especially in the Clone Wars, the cartoon show, I think this one in comics are the ones that are really going to hit, you know, and be able to really draw on that. You know, you could actually get around that a little more, but yet we're not seeing it. And I do have to wonder why.
You know, and I can't help but think about the other star, you know, saga out there, Star Trek. How, you know, they kind of didn't have this problem, right? I mean, they when they first came out, they had an Asian, they had a black, they had a Scottish person. So yeah. they kind of just skipped over this whole issue of race because they were all there. And it's kind of weird to me why Star Wars is getting kind of, you know, the racial thing, even after all this time, even after adding, you know, Mace Windu. But when you said something about the droids, though, I mean, that really clicked for me. Even the droids are more diverse than the Jedi, you know, than the human Jedi. And that's very interesting. You know, that has opened my eyes to a lot of things now.
Would you say that perhaps the way that the droids are treated, and you could take the New Jedi Order as an example, whenever the Yuuzhan Vong are starting all these riots and such to destroy droids because mechanical beings are things that they think of as sacrilegious in a sense. But just in general, we've got droids who are most of the time considered a lower, I don't want to say life form, but a lower form of intelligence, I guess. Artificial intelligence is a lower form of intelligence compared to sentient intelligence. It's very rare that they tend to be given their due by a lot of characters. Is it possible that perhaps one thing that causes Star Wars, whether intentionally or unintentionally, probably unintentionally, to be able to avoid a lot of the different gradations within society, upper class, middle class, lower class, that type of thing, they're able to at least escape some of the lower class areas and some of the issues that are involved with things like, you know, newly arrived immigrants to places who have trouble finding work at first and acclimating to the culture, the idea of, you know, lower paying jobs and the idea of people coming in to pick them up at the ground floor and all that kind of stuff, all the things that tend to drive a lot of racial tension in the world today, in the real world, that they kind of avoid that because a lot of those parts of society, that class, that caste, whatever you want to call it, isn't filled by human beings or by aliens even. They're tending to be filled by droids. Does the addition of droids as another class, if you want to call them that, of being, does that kind of wipe out at least some of where racial tension and racial diversity perhaps even could come from within Star Wars?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, because the droids are the slaves. You know, you have in the Clone Wars, you have slavers who are actually not using droids. They're actually using humanoid or alien beings as their slaves. But in the Star Wars films, you know, and in the EU, like you said, in the New Jedi Order, they're the slaves. When you have slaves that don't have a soul, you kind of write them off, you know, and the droids have gradually become one thing to another. In the prequel trilogy, droids were, you know, evil, you know, the droid army. They're the ones attacking you and stuff like that. And then you get into the original trilogy and, you know, we don't serve your kind here because they remember the droids. You know, I always thought that they had to remember the droids attacking humans and starting the war and trying to wipe out, you know, the Republic and civilization. And then you get into the EU where Luke has his Praxium and, you know, he's trying to rebuild the Jedi Order. And now droids are just basically, you know, peons and slaves and stuff like that. Kind of not looked at either way, not given any type of notice, you know, either way. So, yeah, I think
absolutely. Only the ones that didn't have the memory wipes are the ones that become sentient. You know, it's like they're the rare oddities.
Right, right. And I think, you know, I never been a big fan of R2-D2, you know. And if, you know, I just kind of wished he was the slave that got whipped.
Oh, Whistler's all riled now. I'm going to put a restraining bolt on you, buddy.
I kind of wished R2-D2 was a slave they got whipped sometimes, you know, and they made him change his name to Toby.
Well, you know, they did make him stand behind rocks that disappeared depending on the angle you were viewing from. I think that's pretty bad punishment. And of course, they changed it so that now a whole lot more sticks out of him when he gets shot in Return of the Jedi. Although I tend to think, based on what it looked like before and what it looks like now, I think they were thinking that there was some level of vague accidental sexual reference the way that it looked the first time around. I really do, looking at the exact comparison between the two. All right, we're kind of closing in on sort of our back half here. Let's hit a couple of the more, I guess, you could say somewhat controversial questions, then we'll just zip around the table for some last thoughts on some sort of broader ideas here. Now, we keep talking about how the series, when it comes to humans, tend to be very whitewashed, very focused on human characters that tend to be Caucasian. Of course, the Empire, at least in the classic trilogy, is shown as predominantly human, and most of the time, humans with English accents. Granted, that can be seen as the series being perhaps too white, or too English, perhaps. But,
or filmed in England.
Filmed in England. Could the fact that the evil Empire is made up pretty much of all white males, or white English males, be seen as a knock against white males or English culture, at least dominating in Europe, maybe even alluding to European views of racial and gender superiority that was around, you know, from colonial days and imperialism days and such. Is it possible that in a sense there is a commentary being made by having the empire not just be human and not just be lacking diversity, but specifically being mostly white males, perhaps even white European males, given the British accent?
Yeah, absolutely. I could see it. You know, Lucas has been very good about taking events and wrapping them up. And that's something I think Star Wars and the EU have gone with as well. I mean, we see a lot of things that seem to be references to other things. I recall when Bush came to power, there was a lot of only Sith deal in absolutes, and they had Bush's face on it and stuff like that. You know, and I remember the books kind of seemed to you know, follow along with a lot of the political stuff going along at the times. And that just seems to be something that, you know, has always kind of been there.
I think that's a big knock to white people having it be all British accents. I mean, I kind of feel bad for the British, you know, for that, because, you know, they're pretty nice people. They're pretty, you know, they like their tea and crumpets, and they're not always trying to take over things. I mean, they used to, but now they're more civilized. And I always thought that was kind of mean to white people, that they were the ones, you know, who were running the empire. And, you know, as I in the mid-90s, when I was reading the Thrawn trilogy, you know, they kind of explained that as, you know, the Emperor didn't like aliens, you know, and that's how come Thrawn was this special person, because he was favored by the Emperor and he worked his way up, and him being an alien and kind of breaking the glass ceiling. They just kind of explain that to, you know, they don't like aliens, so that's why there was all these white people around. But it is a big knock. I mean, come on. I mean, you got evil everybody. You know, they just don't have to be all white. But then at the same time, you know, when I always thought Darth Vader was black. You know, I'd mentioned that before. And when he's choking out all these white people, just kind of like, yes, you know, fight the power, you know, get him.
Hooper X is coming out from Chasing Amy now.
You know, even before the prequel trilogy, I always thought that Vader was the good guy, because that's all he killed was the white people on his ships. I mean, he didn't kill anybody else. I mean, Obi-Wan basically committed suicide by not defending himself, but everybody Vader killed was white, was the white people.
The robe drops. No, he got away.
Yeah. You know, after Empire, it was well known that James Earl Jones was the voice of Darth Vader. So if you knew who James Earl Jones was, and he was pretty famous at the time, you kind of imaged. We didn't know what Vader looked like at the time. You know, all you kind of done was see the back of his head, and it was kind of pale and sickly. But, you know, he could have been black. And so as a black child, I really vividly thought that Darth Vader was black and he was choking out all these white people. And, you know, it was pretty funny.
So social commentary, the fighting the man, I suppose. But then again, I mean, Lucas grew up within, you know, the 60s. I mean, he was making films in the 70s as the exploitation films and stuff were really gaining ground again. So you can see that, whether it was subliminal or not, perhaps it's there. Speaking of social commentary, and this has come up a couple times with us on Republic Forces, with me and Barrett talking about the issue with, you know, Dan and Jerry and them. Right now, one of the big things is, of course, the clones. We have the clones being introduced in Attack of the Clones, showing up in Revenge of the Sith, and then really being focused on quite a bit, especially this season, with the Pong Krell arc in the Clone Wars cartoon series. And in a sense, these are characters who are somewhat like the droids in the sense that they are not considered to be of their own will because they have to follow orders. That's what they're designed for. And yet these have the souls, the Baron mentioned there, that, you know, the droids don't have. Do we think that perhaps there is either the potential for, or perhaps they're already making some type of point with the clones in the cartoon series, as far as either a racial or a like an anti-racism or an anti-stereotyping, an anti-class warfare, whatever you want to call it, essentially, can't we all just get along type of message by dealing with issues about the clones? Certainly, we've gotten a lot more depth to characters like Rex and how they view the war just with this last season. Is this a ground that's being used to effectively deal a message like that to the audience, or is it kind of being a missed opportunity thus far?
I think it's one that they're nailing. You know, Karen Travis did the same thing with her Clone Wars, clone novels, the Clone Commandos and all that goodness. You know, we see that at the end of the day, it's meat, blood, and bones underneath it. It doesn't really matter what's on the outside. And I think that that's something the Clone Wars also did. The Pon Krell, the general episodes, oh man, those were just so awesome. And I love it when they deal with the issue of whether or not these are actual beings. You know, Karen did a really good job, and the Clone Wars did a great job of it. And that's just, it's one of those things that it definitely makes you stop, and you definitely have to think about things in a way that you may not have thought of before, or you may have. But either way, you're thinking, and you think about Star Wars.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. It started with Karen Travis. It started with her actually fleshing out who the Mandalorians were, who the clones were, their history, their culture, that they're just not cannon fodder like the Stormtroopers were in Episode 4. You know, you just send more and more and more until you overwhelm them with overwhelming force. You overwhelm your enemy. It started with Karen Travis. It culminated with the Pon Krell trilogy, with Captain Rex kind of figuring out that, you know, you can't just send all of his men to die. And in the middle there, you had the deserter, that episode of the Clone Wars, the deserter, where we had the first deserter there who talked to Rex and was saying, you know, he was the last of his platoon to survive. And when he survived, he couldn't get off the planet. And he started thinking about his own self-worth. And I think they're absolutely nailing it, that just because they're clones, you know, doesn't mean they don't have a soul, doesn't mean that they're not people. Because after you're cloned and you come out of your acceleration chamber, the minute you open your eyes and take your breath, you start becoming different from your brothers.
Yeah. You
know, no matter who it is. And they really are nailing it. And I think that we're going to see a lot more than that, because, you know, we have to find out what's going to happen to Rex, you know. And a lot of people want him to run away with Ahsoka, which I don't think is going to happen.
Not that kind of run away with Ahsoka now. Don't you guys start getting ideas. Although he may, you know, who knows, under his visor, he may be glancing down at that boob window on her current costume quite a bit.
There's probably somebody out there wanting the other, but no.
Yeah, hopefully not. All right, well, we're really approaching the end of our time now, so let me just kind of condense any of our last thoughts into one quick question and zip it around the table as quickly as we can. How good a job do you think that Star Wars is doing right now as far as dealing with issues of diversity in general, whether it's racial or cultural diversity, in terms of, I mean, you can go into the films, the cartoons, the EU, whichever, all of the above, none of the above. And really, as fans, should this be something that we're caring to think about at all anyway? I'll say that I think that the EU is doing a much better job than the movies did as far as presenting diverse cultures and diverse ethnicities within cultures, particularly the human culture that you wind up seeing, or at least the human species you wind up seeing there. And I think that the Clone Wars has great potential to show us a lot of diversity in characters, because it's not even a matter of casting different actors who look the part. It's a matter of simply creating character models. But I think they're missing an opportunity because they don't tend to do a whole lot with that. When there's a character who's not going to be even an established character, in a lot of cases, they go for, hey, let's do an alien because, you know, alien models we can do here more cheaply than maybe we could do in the film, so now it's time to showcase what we can do with aliens. So I think they're doing an okay job, but it really varies depending on which thing you're looking at. And, you know, Star Wars is a cultural thing. It's a cornerstone of geek culture in America and around the world at this point. I think that it's always up to the audience, you know, to take the time to examine and explore the facets of whatever particular fantasy or sci-fi genre that they are particularly interested in. It's just kind of part of what sci-fi is. What do you guys think as our final thoughts?
I would say the EU's done a pretty good job. Comics, far and away, are going to be able to beat out the books. It's always going to be harder to describe ethnic backgrounds in the book. I mean, you know, we get color references here and there. Oh, her skin was bronze and that. But the comics will actually, you can look and actually see a character, and you can actually maybe, you know, maybe, oh, hey, look, she does have Asian eyes, or, you know, anything like that. The TV show, they're doing a really great job of bringing in the cultural backgrounds. I love that. But for me, I mean, I guess it comes down to, yeah, it's nice to see your cultural background being represented, but I think at the end of the day, it shouldn't really matter to Star Wars if we forgot one. I mean, you know, yeah, it'd be nice to get everybody covered under the globe, but I don't think that should be the important part of the story. The story itself and the characters should be the end-all be-all of it. Doesn't really matter to me what color their skin is. As long as the story's good and it's got exciting adventure, I'm ready there.
You know, I have to agree. It's becoming less and less of an issue for me. You know, the older I get, the more of a fan I become, and the better that they handle the people that they do bring in. You know, when they do bring in a Jimmy Smits, when they do bring in a Mace Windu character, they handle them so well that it's almost like getting, you know, one of your famous singers or rappers as a guest star on your on a favorite television show that you have. You know, it's like, oh, you get so excited. You know, the guest LL Cool J is going to be on The Fresh Prince or whatever, you know, or more likely LL Cool J is going to be on MASH or, you know, and that's the kind of feeling I get. They handle it so well when they do bring in a new character that is African-American, Spanish, whatever it is, that they do justice to them. So, you know, as far as the aliens are concerned, you know, some people could get upset with that. But I think people will get upset at anything if they let them to. You know, it's like Star Wars fans, Star Warsians, we're kind of picky. We don't like things to change. You know, we try to find things to throw stones at George Lucas. And I think it's very brave of him and Filoni and the rest of the crew to push those boundaries, you know, and bring out these characters and make them talk a little dirty and a little stupid, you know. And that's the way it's supposed to be. So it's coming less and less of an issue for me. And I think they're doing a really good job. It doesn't mean that we don't need more, you know. It doesn't mean that we didn't need any Mexicans on Mandalore, you know, because we did. But they're doing a good job. I agree with you, Mark.
Barrett, once again, it's great having you on. We appreciate you coming and taking the time here with this very sensitive topic. For those of you out there that think, you know, we might have missed a topic, like maybe women not being portrayed, that may be a topic come later. We may go there as well. This is a controversial month here at Star Wars Beyond the Films. And if you have any feedback, remember, you can find our show at StarWarsReport.com. We're on Zune. We're on iTunes. We're on Middle Earth Network Radio. If you like the show, drop us a review on iTunes or Zune. We really love those. And fire us an email. You can email us at BeyondTheFilms@StarWarsFanWorks.com. Be sure to interact with us on Facebook at Star Wars Beyond the Films. Or you can get a hold of us at Twitter at SW Beyond Films. For Star Wars Beyond the Films, this is Mark Herleman with Nathan Butler and Barrett Lawton. Did I say it right?
Yes, Barrett. Yes.
Nice.
Like Barrett with a B, but not spelled that way.
There you go. And thanks everyone for listening, and may the Force be with you. And don't quote us the odds, because odds are we don't care.